Welcome to the Geological Society podcast. My name's Sarah Day, and I'm with our president, David Manning, who is launching the Year of Mud with his talk, Glories of Mud. So perhaps we should start by talking about the Year of Mud and what it's all about.
Yes, thank you, Sarah. The Year of Mud is an opportunity for us in the Society to celebrate mud in all its various forms. And it's an idea which came out of our science committee at one of these meetings, strategic meetings. Let's have a Year of Mud because there's something in it for everyone. The mud is a fundamental part of the geological system, and we pay attention to that in the Geological Society in so many ways. So we pay attention to the way in which mud formed in the first place, through weathering and hydrothermal processes and a whole host of different ways in which clay minerals can actually be formed. We then look at how they then work their way through the system, through erosion, to deposition, particularly in marine systems, where they start to take on a new life for us as geologists, because, of course, they're sources of materials which we value, and they may be sources of materials like petroleum, of fossil fuels of one sort or another. And they're also there as sources of metals. They relate to the ore deposit and ore-forming stories. And then, of course, in their own right, they can be mined and used to make bricks, if you want to look at them at their simplest, but then work their way through to more sophisticated clay-based products like fine china and to paper, where muds and clays go into paper coating and give us the very, very attractive printed documents which we take for granted on our newsstands. So muds are really valuable. And scientifically, there are a whole pile of interesting questions along the line. So questions which still remain unanswered into the chemistry of clay mineral formation, how that relates to the environment, the geological environment at which those clays may be forming, the problems of diagenesis, by which those clays and muds then finally become mudstones. What are the chemical reactions which take place there? What are the mineralogical reactions? And what ore deposits and other valuable materials might be formed, and how do we understand those? Through to then what happens as we get hotter and hotter, and we find that our muds suddenly turn into slate, and then they may turn into schists and high-grade metamorphic rocks. Ultimately, they'll start to melt, and then we'll get granite coming out of them. So that gives us a starting point for kaolin to form when that granite reaches the surface and starts to be weathered. So there are such things as mud cycles. A mud cycle could be on a very, very large global scale, continental scale, with materials working their way through that system. But equally, a mud cycle could take place on a much smaller scale, looking at how in a catchment area mud is derived from a soil and then deposited in some kind of depositional environment in an estuary, and what happens on that. So that's talked quite a long time about a tiny, tiny mineral.
We all know that being a geologist involves getting muddy. But when people think of what geologists do, they more think about rocks than mud. But it sounds like mud actually sort of underpins almost everything that we do.
Well, I'm biased. But mud is part of the story in that mud turns into rock. And so when we go out to look at mud stones, we're not necessarily looking at the mud itself. We're looking at a rock that has been produced from mud. And then when we look at something like a granite, we may want to reflect upon the mud that once was the parent of that granite. So, yes, we may get muddy as we go out and look at these things, but the rocks there that I've particularly mentioned are materials which are produced from mud ultimately. And part of the detective story that is geology is figuring out how you track back from what you're seeing at the outcrop back to something where it started. And it may have started life as mud, but millions of years ago in some cases.
And as you know, we've been running our 100 Geosites project all last year, and we came up with all sorts of geological sites in the UK that people can visit. Yes. Are there any really good locations? Obviously there are, it being Britain, for seeing mud.
I haven't counted how many of the geosites are mud-based, but you can bet your bottom dollar that there are plenty of them.
And if depends on the time of year, I guess.
Depends on the time of year, yes, that's true. I live in the north of England, and of course Glacial Till is a wonderful mud to go and have a look at, and it sticks to your boots and really adds weight to a walk across the fields. But in the Northumberland coast, for example, and County Durham coast, you can see beautiful exposures of glacial till, as muddy as you like, and those are delightful to look at. And throughout the north of the country, where glacial tills are exposed, those are well worth having a look at, and plenty of meat in them for the geologist's eye. But then, of course, you can look at the mudstones. So we'll go to the Dorset coast, the Jurassic coast will be the primary place to go and see mudstones and their textures and features. And then again, round into Yorkshire, the Yorkshire coast for Jurassic sequences again. And then further north with Carboniferous sequences of muds in Northumberland and Durham, particularly in Northumberland. And throughout Scotland, in the lowlands, plenty of places where you can see muds, on the shore and various stages of having been lithified and turned into rock.
And you mentioned the Jurassic coast, and that's obviously another area which mud is really important in preserving fossils. Is there a particular type of mud or a particular environment that works best?
Well, one of the reasons why muds preserve fossils is that muds, by their very nature, tend to be anoxic at the time of their formation. So material, organic matter that is deposited in a mud will not oxidise. It's partly due to the mechanical properties of the mud, partly due to the chemical properties of the mud. And so fossils tend to be preserved and found in muds. And the thing which I always found terribly frustrating as a young geologist, was that whenever I found fossils in mud, they would fall apart. I never figured out how to keep fossils in one piece, so a bit frustrating from my perspective, but never mind.
And as well as the fossils and the rock record, you mentioned a lot of economic uses for mud. That seems to span almost every aspect of the economy that we can think of.
Yes, I think so. And we start off with the very low value materials like bricks, which are perhaps the Cinderella of the mud economic spectrum, but of course they last for hundreds of years, so they've got a long lifetime, and they're very sophisticated when you think about the way in which we like to live in houses which have particular colours of bricks, and that's a problem. How do you find clays which give you consistent colours that allow you to sell something consistently into the housing market? Then you can work your way through to ceramic products that we drink and eat off, and then through to the very high-value ceramic clays, which are used in paper coating to give us a nice white finish, and clays which have a real function as a filler in plastics and materials like that, in the new materials which are shaping the consumer goods that we have at the present day. So, yes, I mean, clays are there. We would be much the poorer if it wasn't for clays.
And you mentioned the mud cycle and showed some pictures of these sort of aerial views of rivers and mud being deposited. Has human influence had a role in how that all works?
Well, certainly changes in land use do influence the mud cycle, in the sense that whenever deforestation takes place, then erosion is enhanced and we see more mud being carried away from the land to wherever it eventually is deposited. Those who've been unfortunate enough to have suffered from flooding will know from first hand that mud is deposited in your own house. And of course, one of the consequences of increased flooding, increased rainfall, increased flooding, is that we have increased erosion. So it ties into the human scale in terms of our changes in land use, which we drive ourselves, and then of course with the climate change problems which we're facing at the moment, with increased rainfall, particularly high intensity rainfall, which leads to flood events, that is bad news for the loss of clays from soil. Good news if you're a mud aficionado, because there's plenty more mud being produced as a consequence of those activities and those phenomena.
So back to the Year of Mud, what are some of the things we're hoping to get out of that?
Well, we have a spectrum of activities across the society where the scientific groups of the society have honed in on aspects of mud science which relate to their particular interests. So there will be something for everyone, from forensic science through to metamorphic petrology. It's very wide-ranging, and I commend people to have a look at the pages of Geoscientists and the website just to see just how wide this has been. It's captured the imagination of our science committee, and they haven't let us down.
Yes, I think the webpage for that is geosoc.org.uk/mud15, and if you want to follow it on Twitter, the hashtag is Year of Mud. And you can also follow along the GSL lectures with the hashtag GSL lecture, and David's Glories of Mud lecture will be available to watch on our YouTube channel. Thank you very much for talking to me, and we're looking forward to the rest of the Year of Mud.
Thank you, Sarah.